Court is now in session. The Honorable Chief Justice Annette King is now presiding. Your silence is commanded.
All right, good morning. Please be seated. Calling Nudo Holdings, LLC versus Board of Review for the City of Kenosha, 19 AP 1618. Could I have your appearances, please?
Good morning. I'm Paul Homer, and I'm here for the
All right. Good morning. All right, good morning. The lineup this morning, 25 minutes, followed by 30, and 5 minutes in rebuttal. That's your understanding? Excellent. All right, please proceed.
Good morning, and may it please the court. In this case, there is a clear set of statutes, administrative code provisions, and case precedent from this court that says that if a property is chiefly used for growing specified crops during the production season of 1 year, and if the property is not incompatible with that use on January 1 of the tax year, then the property shall be classified as agricultural land and taxed according to the value of the use of agricultural land. And in this case, Anthony Nudo, through his company Nudo Holdings LLC, in September of 2017, purchased a roughly 9-acre parcel of property located in the city of Kenosha. He purchased that from Kenosha County, so it wasn't taxed when he purchased it. When he purchased it, it had numerous Christmas trees growing on the property and 120 walnut trees growing on the property. And what Mr. Nudo did in the fall of 2017 is he cut through brush, he did some tilling, he made his way to these walnut groves, and he harvested the walnuts. That's the only thing he did on the property, other than also obtaining the necessary permits to do that, obtaining permits to potentially hold livestock or chickens at the property, and obtaining permits to pull timber off of the property. January 1, 2018 rolls around, and nothing has changed with the land. Yet the assessor in 2018 taxed the land as residential property. There's no house at the property. There's not even sewer or running water at the property. Yet the assessor classified it as residential. And ultimately, the assessor's decision to classify it as residential boiled down to two main reasons. First, the assessor concluded that, well, hey, this property someday is going to be a residential subdivision. And so because it's eventually going to be residential, it's residential now. The other reason that the assessor...
Is there a statutory provision that sets the date on which we determine use?
It's in the administrative code.
Okay, and which provision are you relying on?
It's section tax 18.05.
Okay.
I believe sub 1.
Very good, thank you.
And what that says is that you look at the production season of the prior year. As long as the use is not incompatible with agricultural use on January 1 of the tax year. The second main reason that the assessor classified the land as residential was that there was an insufficient, according to the assessor, amount of agronomic practices. Now, both the temporal component of this and the agronomic practices component of this were completely contrary to the law, not found in the statutes or administrative code provisions or in this court's precedent. And for those reasons, the court should reverse. Now, taking the temporal issue first, as I just mentioned, the administrative code It's in the definition of the phrase land devoted primarily to agricultural. In the administrative code, it defines that as land in an agricultural in the production season of the prior year and not incompatible with that use on January 1 of the tax year. So because that's already defined in the administrative code, there's absolutely no reason to be looking at future use. It would not make sense for the administrative code to designate a time frame, yet have assessors looking at potential future use of the property. Not to mention the fact that maybe it never does get developed into a residential subdivision. We can't predict what happens in the future, even if that's the intent to potentially do that in the future. If you were able to look at potential future use when looking at agricultural land, it wouldn't specify the production season of the prior year, and it certainly wouldn't say that the use has to be compatible with that use on January 1 of the tax year. Simply put, there's nothing in the statutes or administrative code provisions or this court's precedent that says you look at what the potential future use is of the property when classifying it for tax purposes.
Counsel, do you believe that land upon which there is no home or no sewer could be classified as residential?
I think in the right case it could be. And, for example, in the Toma case, this court affirmed classifying property as residential. And in that case, you didn't have walnut trees growing, Christmas trees growing, like in this case. You didn't have, in the Ogden case, apple trees growing, hay growing, Christmas trees growing. What you had is the taxpayer was, the way the taxpayer described what he was doing was, quote unquote, maintaining ground cover. Which to me meant, and in that case, the taxpayer was developing residential lots. My understanding is they were already parceled out into lots to be sold as in a residential subdivision. And so, yeah, that person is clearly using that property to create a residential subdivision and is just maintaining the ground cover to prevent soil erosion. If that's all you're doing, you know, even if you're technically growing, let's say, alfalfa, which is a crop in the NAICS, which is where we get our list of crops, it doesn't matter that that happens to be growing there. What matters is the use in the Toma case was to maintain the ground cover. It wasn't to grow the crop. Another example on this point, I represented the Ogdens in the Ogden case, and the Wisconsin Farm Bureau attorney at oral argument gave the example of a golf course. A golf course maybe technically has a crop listed in the NAICS growing in the ground. But the primary use of the golf course isn't to grow the grass, it's to create a place to play golf. And the opposite is true here. When Mr. Noodle purchased the property, it had all these walnut trees growing and Christmas trees growing, and the activity that he did was he cut through the brush, he made trails to the walnut groves, and he harvested walnuts.
Counsel, let me tell you what I think is the hard part of my argument. Your argument, and maybe you can persuade me on this. The statute uses the word, you know, primarily, right? Now, as I understand your argument, it's we have some walnut trees growing. We have some Christmas trees or pine trees growing or whatever. But you have the assessor who says this is basically a raw piece of land. Mostly a raw piece of land. At least that seems to be the basic gist of their view of it, with some walnut trees growing and some pine trees growing. And so how is it then let's assume that some portion of the land, a small portion of the land, all right, has some agricultural stuff happening on it, okay? But most of the land, or almost all of the land, is not. It's a raw piece of land, okay? The argument statutorily is not is there farming versus residential in some respects or agriculture versus not. It's whether it's primarily agricultural use. So help me understand why, even acknowledging that there are some things that are, could be classified as agricultural going on the property, but that most of the land is, it seems to have been described as raw land. That seems to be the underlying reason for the Board of Review's decision, why that meets the statutory term, primarily agricultural use.
So this court in the Ogden decision said that primarily means chiefly. And when you're talking about what's the primary use, you're looking at what's the chief use of the property. And so our point is you have this 9-acre parcel. It's got walnut trees and Christmas trees throughout. And literally the only use of the property from September 2017 to December 31st, 2017, the production season of the year preceding the tax year, the only things that happened there were these walnut trees were growing, the Christmas trees were growing, and Mr. Noodle was cutting trails in through the brush to get to the walnut groves to pick up the walnuts. And he was getting the necessary permits to be able to do all this stuff. And so in your example, Justice Hagedorn, if say, for example, there was just one corner of the property, and that's, you know, say it was a really easy example. You had a 1-acre corner that was planted in corn, obvious corn rows. Nobody could dispute that it was agricultural. If the other 8 acres were just raw land, the assessor has the ability to parcel it out, to say you get 1 acre agricultural and 8 acres undeveloped land. It's not an all or nothing proposition, but in the facts of this case, it is, because the walnut trees are scattered through the property and the Christmas trees are scattered through the property. And the only use of the property, not forget chiefly, there's no competing use. The only use was going to the property to harvest walnuts during that production season.
Counsel, isn't the burden, though, on Mr. Noodle before to prove this? I mean, I'm looking at the record, and the assessor did not dispute that there are several walnut trees and several pine trees, but he could observe no evidence of harvesting of anything, and that even if Mr. Noodle had gathered walnuts, he presented no evidence of how much was done or how many nuts were taken. And in fact, Mr. Noodle did not allow them on the property and didn't present any kind of documentation regarding the harvesting. So even if what you're saying is true, is that that could obviously be a use of the property, isn't it on Mr. Noodle to show that that's the use that he made? Why would anyone have to reach that conclusion otherwise?
It is, you're right, Justice Dallant, that it is Mr. Noodle's burden. And I think he carried this burden. He testified about cutting paths on the property, getting to the walnut trees, and harvesting walnuts.
So his testimony should be enough. There shouldn't be any need to have any kind of either viewing of what he's talking about or documentation to substantiate it.
I don't think you need to have documentation.
All the taxpayer has to come to an assessment and say is I've got these trees, I'm planning on doing this with them, or I have taken, harvested some of these trees, and therefore my property is agricultural.
And at a certain point, it becomes a credibility determination for the Board of Review or for the assessor. But in this case, there's nothing in the record that would suggest that the Board of Review members didn't believe Mr. Noodle when he testified that he harvested walnuts. What the Board of Review and the assessor were hung up on was the idea that there had to be these agronomic practices. But agronomic practices is not required unless you're growing short rotation woody crops. The statute defines agricultural use, it defines agricultural land, it defines land devoted primarily to agricultural use, it defines agronomic practices. There's all these definitions in the statutes and administrative code provisions, and the one that the assessor latched onto was the requirement of agronomic practices. But by the clear text of that statute, it only applies to the growing of short rotation woody crops.
Counsel, several times you made reference to the agricultural use was the harvesting of the walnuts. Can you describe the facts of the harvesting?
Sure, I can do that, Justice Bradley. So Mr. Noodle, again, cut trails through the brush to get to the walnut groves. He picked up the walnuts, and he gave them to his mother.
So he didn't he didn't crack them, or were these black walnuts, do you know?
That's not in the record. I apologize. I don't know the specifics of what he did with them. The point, though, is that the statute doesn't get into that. I mean,
So on a day, was it a morning or afternoon, or doesn't the record reflect?
That's not in the record, Your Honor.
So on a day, they picked up the walnuts of whatever variation and gave them to his mother, and that's how you define harvesting?
I mean, harvesting is pulling the crops off the land. So, you know, what I can tell your line of questioning is kind of getting to is basically what this court ruled unanimously was not required in the Ogden case. In the Ogden case, the assessor and the Board of Review took issue with the fact that this was more or less a hobby farm as opposed to a commercial farming operation. And this court unanimously held it is not required for the taxpayer to have some sort of business or economic purpose in growing the crops.
No, I wasn't getting to the business or economic purpose. I was just getting to the, I'll tell you where my question was coming from. As a kid, I used to refrain to the best of my ability from picking up black walnuts. So I just wanted to know what you meant by harvesting, cracking them, or picking them up is your definition.
So I guess my main point, setting aside the temporal issue, which again is clearly defined in the administrative code, the agronomic practices issue is that the statute only requires agronomic practices growing short rotation woody crops, which is basically things like poplars or willows that are used in the biofuel industry.
Counsel, I want to ask a follow-up question. Your argument, again, as I understand it, is that the only actual thing the land was being used for was agricultural, ergo it's, you know, agricultural use. Imagine a 100-acre piece of land that is completely raw and nothing is done on it except for one solitary baby dwarf apple tree. And that somebody goes and they grab the apples. They do that, one or two weekends, and they make some apple pies at home. Nothing is done with the land. Would that seems to meet the definition that you're laying out, that the only thing that's being used for is agricultural, and therefore it meets that. And I guess going back to the statutory language, and I want to read this, and at least, you know, as the tax code defines it, land devoted primarily to agricultural use means land in an agricultural use for the production season of the prior year. But so would you say that apple tree hypothetical, that land is primarily for agricultural use?
Not the entire scope of the land. I mean, again, the assessor has the ability to say this corner of the property or this section of the property, this many acres of the property, is devoted primarily to agricultural use because the only thing happening there is there's an apple tree and you're going and you're picking apples. The rest of the property, it depends on what it is. I mean, if it's full of brush or swamp or marsh, it's undeveloped. If it's, you know, full of sod and it's in a residential neighborhood and you're just maintaining the ground cover like in the Toma case, it's probably residential. But in this case, we have walnut trees throughout the property, Christmas trees throughout the property. And, yeah, it is my point. The only thing happening there was going there, cutting through the brush to get to the walnut groves, and harvesting the tree nuts. And the North American Industry Classification System, subsector 111, which lists all these different crops, says growing tree nuts. And if you work backwards from there, the definition of agricultural use is activities in that NAICS document, which would include growing tree nuts. And growing tree nuts, I would say, is an activity. It's something you can do. And
for how long in the year prior to the assessment year did your client own the property?
From September 11th, 2017 through December 31st, 2017.
And in determining whether the land was devoted primarily to agricultural use, do we look at what your client did during that ownership, or do we look at the entire year and what the prior owner did?
Well, it's the production season, so it could depend on the type of crop. And my understanding is walnuts fall in the fall. So it was during the time when he owned it was the production season, which is also evidenced by his testimony that he went to the property, cut trails to get to the walnut groves, and harvested walnuts. But I want to make a point.
Can I just interrupt? If you wanted to build a house on this property right now, could you? Or in 2018?
In 2018, you could not. Without substantial hundreds of thousands of dollars of getting sewer and water to the property.
How was it zoned?
It was zoned agricultural.
Was this farm registered in any way?
It was registered with Kenosha County as a farm for holding livestock, for holding chickens, for pulling timber off the property.
So at the time this property was assessed, could it be anything other than a farm?
No. I want to get back.
I thought in looking, and I did it, the Wisconsin Property Assessment Manual, that how something is zoned is not dispositive. Am I correct?
That's correct.
Yes. So even though, I don't understand your answer to the last question.
Well, I think he was answering my question.
Yeah, I
appreciate that.
I don't understand your answer as no when zoning is not dispositive.
Well, I think the question was, could this be classified as anything else than a farm? And I took that to mean, could this be classified as anything other than agricultural land? And my point is no. I think the zoning is a component of that. I mean, it was illegal for him, for Mr. Nudo, to use the property as a residential use at the time in question.
I thought that the testimony was, and consistent with Chapter 12, residential property valuation in the Wisconsin Property Assessment Manual, I thought the testimony was that it was purchased to divide into lots, and that was the imminent use.
That was the future intent at the time, and I want to use that to make another point here.
Can I just ask you briefly? Can you think of any case that says potential future use of property is how an assessment occurs based upon the statutory language?
Well, I don't see how it's based on the statutory language, but the assessment manual does instruct assessors to do that. In the Metropolitan Holdings case, says that the statutes in the administrative code trumps the Wisconsin Property Assessment Manual. As far as a case, I am not sure if that's been held at any point.
Well, if an assessor could envision a potential use someday of some property, they could assess property at anything they wanted.
Right. I mean, I could tell the assessor I'm going to build the Empire State Building next year, and all of a sudden my tax assessment is through the roof. I mean, it doesn't really make sense. And as the Wisconsin Realtors Association pointed out in their brief, it's only, for some reason, the Wisconsin Property Assessment Manual only refers to this future use element for residential property.
Yes, in fact, it's on page 12-1 in Chapter 12, where it speaks of use is reasonably likely or imminent. And that was my question. I was under the impression that the record reflected that was the purpose for buying this property. I forget how many lots. Sometimes I get these cases that I'm reading, whether it's the Toma case or the Ogden case. Was it 12 lots he was going to subdivide it into?
I don't recall. And Justice Bradley, it was the potential future plan. Yeah. Right. The property was purchased to potentially someday develop.
Yeah, he wasn't going to keep it to raise walnuts.
He was using it at the relevant time to grow walnut trees and to grow Christmas trees.
Counsel, let me ask you, because part of your argument is it must be agricultural because it couldn't be anything else. So if he If these trees are just growing on the property and he never cut down the brush to get to them, what is your position as to what it would be zoned at? Assessed at.
I think if there was no actual, if the purpose of the property was just holding it and you weren't actually doing anything whatsoever, then I think it would be hard to say that you were really using the property to grow the nuts.
Okay,
right?
So what would it be assessed?
So I would say this, it's been described by the board as being heavy underbrush, and the definition of undeveloped land, which is taxed at 50%, includes lowland brush. So I would say that it would be undeveloped land.
And you're telling us that what changes it from undeveloped land to agricultural is the fact that he cut through. And I don't even know if the record is clear how many paths. You said there's trees all over. I don't know that the record shows that he cut through but anything but maybe one path to get to one tree.
Well, I think
cut
it
through
says
one path to get to one tree, that's enough to change it to agricultural.
Well, I think the record says paths, plural. But I get your point. The record is
not
unclear
allowed
on
the
that.
Record.
The
but
record
Mr.
is unclear on that.
Mr. Zimmer, looking at the administrative code at tax 18061, where it talks about how land is classified, it says an assessor shall classify as agricultural land devoted primarily, which is the issue here, and then it talks about land devoted primarily to agricultural use, and it gives some examples. Shall typically bear physical evidence of agricultural use, such as furrows, crops, fencing, or livestock appropriate to the production season. But then this is the sentence I'm interested in. It says, if physical evidence of agricultural use is not sufficient to determine agricultural use, the assessor may request of the owner or agent of the owner such information as is necessary to determine if the land is devoted primarily to agricultural use. I know his lights. Can I just ask? I've got one
yes,
more phrase.
And you may answer her question.
Thank you, Chief. So my question is, if the assessor is allowed to request of the owner some additional information, it's my understanding from this record that the assessor was not allowed to get that information. That is, that the assessor was not allowed access to the land to make this informed decision under 1806 sub 1. I want to give you an opportunity to respond to that.
Sure. My understanding of the record is the assessor acknowledged the walnut trees and the Christmas trees were growing on the property. There was no dispute about that. And under 18.06 sub 1, it lists as some of the physical evidence, crops. And here, even though it's not corn or soybeans that are obvious, it's walnut trees, the walnuts are the crops. And so by acknowledging that the walnut trees are growing there, the assessor did have physical evidence of the crops. My understanding is that the assessor did ask for additional documentation. Some additional documentation was provided, like the permits and things like that that Mr. Nudo obtained. But if you think about, you know, why would they ever need to get additional documentation? Well, if they're assessing it and they're looking at the property in January 1 of 2018, it might be covered in snow. I mean, you might not know if it's something that grows underneath the ground, you might have no idea. And so, you know, types of documentation that could be provided are things like receipts for the crops that you purchased or something like that, showing the date that you had it during the production season of the prior year. So there could be situations where the documentation is relevant because you can't see the crops. And really, that just shows that you don't necessarily have to have rows or fencing or other things that you could be able to see. So
right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Justices. May I please the Court? I wonder if anyone would have predicted that 25 years ago, developers would be arguing for the expansion of the definition of agricultural use. When the state's Constitution Uniformity Clause was amended in order to pave the way for the legislature's decision to tax agricultural land at less than its fair market value, the idea was to promote agriculture in Wisconsin. Now, according to the petition filed by briefs from the Wisconsin Realtors Association and the Association of the Wisconsin Builders, They seek a very expansive view and notion of what it means to ag land. And all you can look at is what is the absolute least amount of agricultural use do you have to do in order to qualify for a significant tax break? Tax breaks that developers obviously think are necessary in order to develop the next subdivision.
Mr. McTernan, should we be concerned about the fact that this land is zoned as, I think it's A2, as agricultural?
Not at all. I wear my hat most of the time representing real estate developers like Mr. Nudo, and they purchase land all the time, and they go through the city permitting process. They obtain permits. They have it zoned agricultural when they buy it. They spend millions of dollars, and they sit there, and they go through the process. And the communities look at the property, regardless of how it's zoned, because that's not the requirement. They look at what is the eminent use of the land. Like this land, the eminent use as it was acquired was for residential purposes. It was acquired spending in excess of $10,000 an acre, not because it was being purchased for farmland. It was being purchased to develop it for residential purposes.
Council, was there any evidence presented that this land was used for residential purposes on January 1st?
No, there wasn't, but that isn't what the statute requires.
Well, I'm looking at, and I'll tell you what's bugging me, is 70.32(c)(3), okay? And it talks about how you define uses of land. And 70.32 is entitled Real Estate, How Valued, okay? And the definition of residential real estate includes land, quote, that is not suitable for the production of row crops and on which a dwelling or other form of human abode is located. So was there any house on this land?
No, it wasn't. There wasn't houses on the land, and as the court can take notice, you look at the record as it relates to the use for agricultural purposes, there wasn't any irrigation done to the land. There wasn't any testimony.
You don't necessarily have to irrigate it. I'm more concerned about how you got to residential. You are all arguing about why it's not agriculture, and I understand those arguments, but I don't see how you fit it within residential, given what I've seen in the record, unless I've missed something, which is certainly possible, and that's why I asked you.
Well, I think you look at the definition, and residential use is reasonably likely or eminent. That is the definition.
That is not what the statute says. That is not what the statute says.
Well, looking at...
Reading subsection 3 out of the statute, 70.32, it's C3, and it defines residential.
Well, in that context, I have clients that do have residential property, and if you look at the way it's structured, you can even have residential lots that are farmed. Lots of real estate developers have residentially zoned land, and they farm them.
Right,
but
they have characteristics, like if you have a farm, maybe you have a small farm, and you have a house on it where you live, and you farm all of the land except where your house is sitting on, you still would have a house on the land showing residential use. This land doesn't have sewer or water. You couldn't put a house on this land on January 1st. There was no way to do it.
Well,
I don't understand how you get to residential.
Because the statute looks prospectively. It looks for what...
What it says. Where do you find that in the statute?
I find that, Your Honor, in the manual that the assessors are using in order to determine...
Well, you're looking at WPAM. I know we do look at that. Your opposing counsel said the date we look at is January 1st of each year. That tells you the tax date for the
Correct.
Rest of the year. Do you agree that January 1st is the date we look at?
You look at January 1st, and if you're looking at it for residential purposes, you look to the future of what it's most eminently going to be used for.
Okay, where do you find this January 1st date? Opposing counsel gave me a site. I'm interested in yours.
Yes, the same site he used, Your Honor. I agree. That is the date that you use. It is a January 1st, and as he stated.
And I didn't notice anything in that administrative rule that said prospective use. It just said the use on January 1st. That's how things are taxed. Right?
Correct. And I would address it that the use, Your Honor, have to look at the agricultural use. And I would argue that an 8.9-acre parcel of land where all that was done was a path was cut through some overbrush
I think you have a good argument on that side. But that's not what's bugging me. What's bugging me is you chose residential. Why didn't you choose just undeveloped land?
Because undeveloped land, under the statute, if you look at the definition of undeveloped land, it's low land. It's swamp land. It's land that cannot be developed. And although it's not in the record, this was land that was easily developed and set in the master plan for the St. Peter's neighborhood.
Okay, so you could farm this land then that was there. So that's why you wouldn't look at undeveloped land.
Right? Correct.
You could farm it.
You could do a lot of things on it. You could put a factory on it.
Look at residential land. It says a parcel of untitled land that is not suitable for the production of row crops. So you couldn't grow row crops on this land? Was there any evidence about that?
Well, that was the problem. There wasn't any evidence whatsoever, and the assessor looked at the property, could not get access because the taxpayer wouldn't let the assessor on the property. So all they could see is, as was in the record, an enormous amount of underbrush. The place was filled with overgrown property that had sat there for decades. And as
in answer to my question, there was no testimony that this land was not suitable for growing crops.
There was no testimony, no, Your Honor.
Okay. And that's one of the criteria you have to have it be zoned residential, right?
That it has to be subject to...
It said, I'm just reading out of the statute, parcel of untitled land that is not suitable for the production of row crops. But there was no testimony that this land was not suitable for growing
No, there wasn't.
Okay, thank you.
Was there any testimony that there was a dwelling or other form of human abode on the property?
No, there was no testimony on that, Your Honor.
If there's a conflict between the manual and the words of the statute, which one should control?
I believe you look to the manual, as that is what has been handed down for the assessors to use in order to determine whether or not the classification that has been applied is appropriate.
Do you think the manual trumps the statute?
No, but I believe that the statute gives them the overview of what should be classified for the property, but the Department of Revenue has outlined that the manual is to be used in order to determine classification by the assessor, and that's what they're using in order to make this classification.
Maybe I didn't ask my question very artfully. I thought I meant to ask, if there's a conflict between the manual and the words of the statute, which one should we look to? Your answer was the manual,
correct.
I think.
Yes.
Mr. McTier, are you done, Chief?
I have one follow-up, Justice Kurofsky. I don't see how a manual could possibly trump the duly enacted laws of the state of Wisconsin. Could you explain that argument to me, please?
I believe... the legislature has instituted the process by which the assessors are to follow in order to determine and examine the property in order to figure out how the property should be taxed. And they're looking at how it is being used. And that's where you get to the terms where they examine the taxpayer's use of the property. Was it being used for agricultural purposes? And there's nothing in the record that the assessor was able to rely on that it was primarily or chiefly used for agricultural purposes.
Before it was purchased by Nudo, how was it taxed? How was it assessed?
It was owned by the County of Kenosha. It was nothing was done in it whatsoever. So during the entire crop season, as we could argue from spring of 2017 until September 11, 2017, nothing was done with it.
But what was its classification for tax assessment purposes before Nudo purchased the property?
Owned by the County of Kenosha. I assume that it's not taxed at all, seeing it's owned by the County of Kenosha.
So it had no classification.
Mr. McTiernan, Mr. Zimmer, in his argument and also in his brief, made an interesting point, and I want to ask you to respond to it if you would. He said, look, you don't have to look at this at all the property and just assess it as one, right? You could look at part of it and you could say this part over here is agricultural, this part over here is residential. And so, like I said, he brought it up in his briefs, he brought it up this morning, but I'm interested in what your response is to that, because what I hear him saying is there were some walnut trees and you could have figured out how many acres of walnut trees you had, and you could have said that's agricultural, but and then So part of it would have been, and the other part maybe would have been residential.
And I believe the record is clear that that was presented to Mr. Nudo, because the Board of Assessors looked to try to see if there are a handful of walnut trees on the property. Can we look at classifying that portion of the property for agricultural use? And the taxpayer, like in the Toma case, he said no. It's either all or nothing. Either all the property is being used for agricultural purposes or nothing. So the record with the assessor left nothing before him other than, I need to treat all this land as either agricultural or I have to use this land simply and find that it's not agricultural. I'm stuck with the classification of residential because that is the eminent use of this property based on all the items before the community on what they planned on using this land, and based on the taxpayer's own testimony that he purchased it for residential, eminent residential development.
Counsel, were there any arguments in this case outside of the residential versus agricultural in terms of like other classifications for the land?
The record doesn't reflect that there were any of those discussions at all, other than, you know, as the assessor went by the property and looked at it and wasn't allowed access to the property, circled around this 8.9-acre parcel and could not see anything. By the testimony of the assessor, unable to determine if there were some sort of pine trees, that couldn't tell if those are scattered pine trees, and that's all the evidence was, they were scattered throughout the property. And also some walnut trees, again, not built in rows like you would see a farm of walnut trees. If you're growing up and you were on a walnut farm, they would be in rows. None of that existed here. And being unable to determine what was actually going on, not having any access, and also asking the taxpayer, can you please provide us evidence? Tell me how many bushels you yielded. Not just one day. Albeit 2 months after the growing season for walnuts has ended. I mean, walnuts are typically harvested in early October, otherwise the squirrels take them all. This was in December. Luckily, there wasn't snow on the ground. But if the sole activity is just to go into your property that has some walnut trees and pick up some walnuts, and then you get the agricultural classification, I think it attacks and deteriorates the whole purpose of why we have the agricultural classification in the first place.
Can I ask one other follow-up?
Sure.
Thanks, Justice Dodd. When I look at the statutory language here in 7032 sub 2, one of the things I find interesting about all of the particular classifications, all of them use, save one, uses the word means. So agricultural forest land means, agricultural land means, agricultural use means, agronomic practices means, productive forest land means, undeveloped land means, but then it says residential includes any parcel or part of a parcel of untilled land. So it seems that residential is that definition in 72.2c3 is defined differently. It's not defined, actually. It just says it includes it. And I wonder if you have any thoughts about why that might be.
And that broad term includes is not inclusive. It gives you examples, and I believe it's because it's exactly how real estate development occurs. Real estate development occurs where you buy undeveloped land, and developers purchase it and know that their use of the land is going to be dividing it and creating it into subdivisions or creating it for residential housing. Because it includes, they aren't telling you that on January 1st, a vacant parcel of land can't just be simply zoned and treated as agricultural and taxed as agricultural because you don't have a house on it yet. As we all know, it takes time to put in a subdivision. It takes time to put in sewer, water, and the utilities necessary to then eventually pull a permit to build a house. And I'm confident the whole reason that it includes is it's letting the tax assessor know this is the path you take in order to take land that is raw, that is undeveloped, that is vacant, and if you are eminently going to divide this parcel up into 18 lots and put residential development on it, which is what it ended up being, it's to be taxed as residential for residential purposes.
So wouldn't your response to maybe some of my colleagues' questions be that maybe the policy manual can't trump the language of the statute, but here it's not in conflict with it because it does not limit it to whether there's a house on the land. And therefore, the legislature's other language authorizing the policy manual allows it to include some of these other pieces.
Because I believe that if you look at the statute, there's a specifics. You have to have agricultural practices. You have to have certain things done for it to qualify for agricultural use. But on residential, you don't need those hard and fast specifics of a house on the property, having sewer water on the property, in order for it to qualify for residential taxation. And that is a big distinction, because, you know, in the context, if that is the case, then you're going to be shifting all of the tax burden onto anyone who owns a house. And any residential developer is going to then be able to say, I don't need to do anything more than to find a pine tree or a walnut tree and send someone out to run out on December 31st of the tax year and pick up some walnuts. I don't need to. I don't need to process them. I don't need to even account for them. And if an assessor says, I picked up some walnuts, it's all you need to do. I mean, that means that if you found some maple trees on the property, you can just not even have to tap the maple trees and say you have a maple farm. If you find some wild raspberries on the properties, I mean, all you have to do is go pick up some wild raspberries, and even though you don't have a house on it, can you then argue, I have a raspberry farm? Or do you just need to call it McTernan's Raspberry Farm and find some raspberries, and now I can avoid paying the fair tax as it relates to the eminent use for residential purposes and get away and have the ability to say, now I'm a farmer and the property's ag?
The issue I have with your argument is that we've said over and over again that the classification of real property for tax purposes is based on actual use, not prospective use, not future use. And so there does seem to be a conflict between the statutes as this court has consistently interpreted them and the manual, which says you can look at how is it going to be used in the future. There's nothing in the statutes or the administrative code about prospective use in this regard, is there?
No, there isn't, but I do believe that that specific broadening term of residential use includes is giving this broad definition of what you're using the land for.
Right, it's what you're using the land for in the relevant time frame. It is not what you're going to be using the land for, because I think you acknowledge and you've conceded that it was not being used for residential purposes. There's no house on the property. There's no infrastructure that would support residential living on that land. It could be in the future, but it's not.
Well, I'd argue that the included use is exactly what Mr. Nuto did to include it. He was marketing and using and purchasing and telling people he purchased this land for $100,000 because he planned on putting a residential development on it.
Right, but it wasn't there yet, and none of the infrastructure was there yet, right?
Correct, but that happens all the time on residential platted or land that is set, scheduled as it was here by the Kenosha, City of Kenosha, scheduled to be used for residential purposes, scheduled to be plotted with 18 single-family lots to be used for residential purposes. And I'd argue that the agricultural use, it bemoans the definition that agricultural use is just literally walking onto a 9-acre parcel of land and picking up a couple of walnuts. That if that is the least amount of human activity that is there, aren't we looking at a deteriorating the whole point of why we amended the Constitution to allow for the broadening and protection of agricultural farming of property? Is it really?
Well, I don't think this court looks at the intent of legislation. We look at the words that the legislature actually enacted and try our very best to give them their plain meaning.
And I'd argue their plain meaning when the residential use includes the development of lots in the future is exactly what the legislation intended. If they wanted to limit it to say
sure,
you needed...
You're not hearing what I'm saying. We're not concerned with what the legislature intended. None of us have a crystal ball, though sometimes I can tell you we wish we did. We have to use the words they actually chose.
Correct. And I believe in the words of agricultural use, and as the assessor tried to solicit from the taxpayer, begging him, can you give me photographic evidence of what this property looks like? Instead, the taxpayer provided evidence of a different farm, of a different piece of property that was farmed, that clearly the photograph showed, well, that is farmland. They asked for yields. How many bushels of walnuts did you produce? None of it was provided. How many trees exist? How many trees of pine trees exist? What are the type of pine trees? Are they truly Christmas trees? Or are they just wild-growing pine needle trees?
So, counsel, look, in what you're talking about, it leads into my question. So Mr. Zimmer talked about the fact that there is enough in this record because his client just said, went in front of the board or the board and said, this is what I use it for. I've cut, there's lots of walnuts and I picked them and I gave them to my mother. In terms of the record here and the burden, can you respond to his statement that that's all it would take, that that's all you need? You don't need to give access. You don't need to give records, that the person just can go and say that that's what they did.
I do believe you don't have to have access to the property, but I believe that the record and the requirement is on the taxpayer to overcome the burden that is placed on him to prove the assessor who drives by the property and does an assessment based on what he can see legally by driving past the property and determining whether or not there is any agricultural use at all. And so the taxpayer has the burden to overcome the determination of the assessor. It's not the other way around. The assessor is there for presenting the information they have to the Board of Review, and the Board of Review has the right to look to the assessor to make the determination, and it's the burden of the taxpayer to overcome that burden.
So there could be a situation where someone buys land that they intend to develop, but in the meantime, they do provide proof that they've gotten this type of yield or some of the other things that you were saying. They would just need to present that to the board. Is that what you're saying?
And then that is exactly what occurred in the Ogden case. The taxpayer was presented evidence that he planted rows of pine trees for harvesting as Christmas trees. He planted rows of walnuts or other trees on the property for harvesting. He took photographs of what he did. They were set up in a line. He irrigated, he fertilized, he pruned back and weeded the property in order to use it for agricultural purposes. He showed the human interaction with the land in order to give him the classification that he was using it for agricultural purposes. All of that was requested of the taxpayer, and none of it was provided. Not a photograph of the it would have been wonderful, a photograph of the site. And I guess the reason you didn't give a photograph is, as we all know it when you see it. I'm certain if a photograph of this land was taken, we would have seen it and said, well, that's not farming.
Counsel, you mentioned Christmas tree planting. And of course, we have had cases regarding that. Generally, it's in a row crop. Could this property have been planted with Christmas trees in a row for Christmas tree farming?
There's no evidence in that any of the trees that were planted in any configuration that would have given it rise to it being a Christmas tree farm.
But there was discussion earlier that this is not classified as undeveloped land. It's not lowland, for instance. So it seems to me that it could have been made into a row crop of Christmas trees.
It could have easily been done. So any property owner, because it had the permits as Mr. Noodle provided in the record, he could have easily gone on the property, put in a row of Christmas trees, put in irrigation or done other work to the land in order to crop the land, in order to set it aside to be used for growing purposes, but none of that is in the record.
So in response to 70.32 sub 3, I believe it is, the residential includes any parcel or part of a parcel untilled land that is not suitable for the production of row crops. Is it your position that this could be row crops?
Well,
it was suitable for row crops if you wanted to put them in.
Absolutely, and I think the evidence of Mr. Noodle being able to harvest walnuts from the property makes it is a suitable property for agricultural purposes. It is suitable, and it defeats the point of saying, well, now we should classify this as undeveloped swampland. And that's what the classification calls for. So obviously having the ability to do that and the ability to set it up as that lends itself to saying it defeats the point of it being undeveloped land.
What's the definition of residential if it is not three? if it's broader than what's included in 3. I mean, the word includes, Justice Hagedorn pointed that out, is used. Residential includes these things. But it seems like that reading is includes but is not limited to these things. So residential is anything the assessor says including these things?
No,
the definition?
No, the definition on residential is what is it eminently likely to be used for?
Someday?
Someday? Reasonably likely or eminent? And it's seen it's not lowland, seen it's not being used for agricultural purposes, seeing that the taxpayer is the one that is marketing it as and telling the Board of Assessors, I bought it to be used for a residential development, that would be reasonable for them to rely on the plain language that says reasonable use is reasonably likely. Reasonably likely, that was the whole point, it was purchased.
Then it doesn't matter what something's zoned. You can just start your residential building right now.
It doesn't matter. Zoning doesn't drive whether or not the taxation should be.
So without any changes or doing anything else, they can just start building. They can bring in the sewer and the water, and they can build the houses and create a residential area regardless of how it's zoned. Because it's zoned agriculture, right?
Zoned agriculture. It is. And agricultural, could you, in theory, on agricultural property, place a house? Absolutely. Farmers do it all the time. They have properties and they pull a permit and put in a septic and put in a well.
But you need a permit.
You need a permit, correct.
Are there permits that are issued for residential?
On this, no, the taxpayer had not done that yet.
Okay. What other indications are there that this is residential? I'm trying to figure out what residential means other than whatever the assessor says unless you can prove otherwise.
Well, it's property that is situated and ready to be developed and reasonably likely to be an expansion of an existing real estate development that is surrounding this site. This site, although it's not in the record, what is in the record is it's part of the master plan.
Yeah, we're stuck with the record.
No, what is in the record, right. What is in the record is it's in the master plan for the St. Peter's neighborhood, which is exactly what this was as an expansion of the St. Peter's neighborhood where residential lots would be going into this area.
Your answer to the Chief Justice's question, what's the law behind that? Are you getting that from the manual? Are you getting that from the code? Precisely where are you getting that definition so we can all be on the same page?
That's out of the manual that tells you that it's reasonably likely or eminent to be included as residential property.
Council, what import is 70.32 sub 1? We've been going down the page and turning the page and looking at residential includes. But what has the legislature told us how the real property should be valued?
It should be valued at its fair market value. Looking at the property and looking at it and determining what is the real fair market value for that parcel.
While I was looking at sub 1, real property shall be valued by the assessor in the manner specified by the Wisconsin Property Assessment Manual provided under 70.032A.
And the assessor then, as they did in this case, they looked at the property and looked at what is the fair market value for residential real estate, and looking at the approximately 8.9 acres of land, and looked at the value of what that property is valued at. Mr. Nudo had purchased it for $100,000, and I believe the assessment that they had determined was approximately $89,000, if I'm not mistaken.
Right, 70.032A, not 70.032A, talks about the powers and duties defined, and then that talks about their preparation and publication of assessment manuals and how the manuals have to show methods and techniques and practices to show uniformity and consistent practices and how they're amended, and then it goes through the standards. So whatever the manual says is what goes. The manual can define residential, and it doesn't matter how something's zoned or whether it can really today be used as that. It's what the manual says.
Well, and I'd argue that even if it's just based on permits, the permits that were obtained were permits to harvest Christmas trees, but none of that occurred. The permits to put livestock on the property, none of that occurred. The permits to have chickens on the property, none of that occurred. So it can't be simply that just because you have a permit in hand, you're entitled to then get agricultural zoning classification if it wasn't used for that purpose. And that's exactly what happened here. He had permits, but he didn't use them. So that shouldn't be the driving force of allowing agricultural use to take place and have agricultural determined first based on classification when just because he had permits and he never used them.
Now, Council, aren't we looking just at a three-month period of use for him?
If you might. I'd argue that the way the statute is situated, you would look at the entire agricultural growing season. So you would have to look all the way back to the spring of 2017, and there's absolutely no evidence of what occurred in the record from the moment spring hit of 2017 until he did whatever he did sometime after September of 2017.
But he owned it only for three of those months, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Rebuttal?
May it please the court, I'd like to try to answer some of the questions that came up in the last session. There is a decision called Metro Holding. It's a Wisconsin Supreme Court decision from 1993 that says compliance with the manual is not a defense when the method of assessment suggested by the manual results in a violation of section 70.32 sub 1. So there's clear case precedent from this court that the statutes trump the assessment manual.
So, counsel, how does this method result in a violation when residential property is defined in a way as includes, as opposed to the choice that the legislature made to define other ways of assessing to be very specific in what it means? Can you respond to that?
Yes. So I think by using the word includes in the definition of residential, it's referring to situations like in the Toma case where you've got everything platted out, you've got it all covered in grass or ground cover, as Mr. Toma testified in that case, and you're trying to sell the lots. I mean, at a certain point, it's residential. And even though it doesn't yet have the house built on it.
At what point would you say that is, counsel, since you're saying, according to your definition, as long as he's picking up walnuts from the ground, it's not. So,
well,
how do you draw that line?
Yeah, I mean, I think you draw it at looking at what is the land chiefly being used for, and is it chiefly being used for a residential development in the fall of 2017? I think you have to say no. It's chiefly being used for the growing of these walnut trees and growing these Christmas trees. That's the only use occurring during that time period. And it wasn't, by the nature of how he bought it, and before he bought it, when it was owned by Kenosha County, it was taxed exempt because it was owned by the government. But he did have a short window of time, but it's got to fall into one of these categories. And it's not a residential subdivision.
It seems to me that maybe the statute says primary use, and what I hear you saying is this is the way the land is being used primarily.
Yes.
And I get how close both phrases are, but they're really different. Which one are you saying? The statute says primary use, but what I hear you say is that this is how this land is being used primarily. That is that there's little use, but there is some use over here where the walnuts have been picked and some Christmas trees grew.
Well, again, the walnut trees on this property are scattered throughout the property. And the primary use of the land is growing the Christmas trees and growing these walnut trees. And the Ogden case, again, kind of defined primarily as the word chiefly.
I don't mean to interrupt
sure.
You're almost running out. Could the primary use be no use at all? That is, that the primary use of this land was that it was raw land.
And if that was the case, then maybe it would be undeveloped land or something like that. But if you look at the statutes and the administrative code provisions, it defines agricultural use as activities in the NAICS, which includes growing tree nuts. It also says, in addition to those activities in the NAICS, growing Christmas trees and growing ginseng. So in trying to add crops to this list on the NAICS, the legislature or the DOR, when creating this administrative code provision, didn't say, you know, farming these things or growing these things with agricultural practices or growing it like a farmer. It just says use of the property being growing Christmas trees or ginseng or activities on the NAICS, which includes growing tree nuts. Or in the Ogden case,
Council,
growing apples or hay.
Was any tilling of the land done?
I'm sorry, what?
Was the land tilled?
There was some tilling, is what the record says.
For what?
For the purposes of the walnut trees and the Christmas trees. The record is somewhat ambiguous on that point. Mr. Nudo testified that he had done some tilling, and that's what it says.
Okay. Council, when did you obtain the Christmas tree permit?
I believe that was in 2017. Yeah, okay. My understanding is he obtained these permits kind of right away.
Okay, so then obtaining that permit means that you thought it was suitable for the production of the row crop of a Christmas tree. Is that correct?
That's right. And I think the board, by conceding that the property is suitable for growing row crops, takes this out of the definition of residential. Mm-hmm. And I did want to make one final point. I know that's tied to that. I know my light is red.
Finish up.
There's a case that's been cited in the briefing called West Capital, Inc., which is a Court of Appeals case from 2014. And it talked about this definition of residential including instead of meaning. And it says, aside from the property specifically described in Inspection 70.32, sub 2, sub 3, any other property included in the residential class must fall within the ordinary meaning of the term residential. And that's where I get to. You look at the Toma case. It's at that point, you're just maintaining ground cover. It's a residential development. The lots are for sale. You look at this case, it's filled with walnut trees and Christmas trees, and there's walnut harvesting going on. It falls within the agricultural land definition.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Very interesting arguments. Coming today to present your arguments and listen to and answer our questions. So thank you for that. We're going to take a brief break and let the parties for the next case come forward, and then we'll be back out to hear those arguments.